What is a tornado's favorite game? Twister! But you didn't see that one coming, huh? Hello, everybody, and welcome to Starting Sustainability. This is episode 116, and I am your host, Kaylin Chenoweth. There has been a lot going on in my neck of the woods for the last couple of weeks. Like, I really mean a true whirlwind of events has been happening. On March 1st, mask mandates were dropped at both my work and our children's daycare. Woohoo! I'm celebrating because we were not allowed to wear cloth masks at work. We could only wear the disposable, and the amount of waste the masks created made me cringe every day. I would walk in, security would hand me two masks inside of a plastic Ziploc bag. I would do my best to save the mask and the bags and reuse them as much as possible, but I mean, I got these every single day for almost 2 years. So it was quite a lot of trash, and that was just me. So now imagine every single person who came into the facility or was on the campus. That's a lot of waste. But now I am celebrating because it is a waste stream that has been eliminated from my life, and I don't have to deal with it anymore. Yay! Also, on March 1st, we were able to implement our first food waste collection at one of our cafeteria sites. I am really, really excited about this. So we have six sites all together. We put it in at one site. And what I mean by food waste collection, I mean compost. That's right, because I work in a cafeteria. I work at like six different cafeterias. But anyways, all of the food waste back of house, so that's everything on the cafe side, not the customer side, but the cafe side, everything back there is being collected, measured, and then placed into a compost bin. Yay! Celebrate, celebrate. So once this is deemed successful at the first site, then it can spread and be implemented to all the other sites, which is really, really awesome. So we've been going strong at it for about 3 weeks now, and I'm super duper excited at the amount of food waste we are preventing. I don't know about you guys, but everyone around me is planting their seeds and gearing up for their gardens, and I am not, and I am sad. And I really, really want to, but I have a major hurdle in my way. We are moving. It has been quite a whirlwind of an experience. We have been looking for a house with land for quite some time now so we can achieve our sustainable goals. And all of a sudden, there was this house that came available and we got to go look at it. We put in an offer and it was accepted, which is the super exciting part. So not only are we getting a house with land, we are moving to Lafayette, Indiana, which is about an hour and a half north of where I'm currently at. And a lot of my family is there, which is wonderful. And another bonus is we are moving outside of this town with the contaminated drinking water. So now I will be able to drink the water coming out of my faucet again and not have to worry about it. That is a gigantic win in terms of sustainability. I am extremely thrilled about this. Within the wheeling and dealing of buying a house, once our bid was accepted, part of the contingencies was that we had 15 days to sell our house. And I was like, oh, that's not a problem. We're in an up-and-coming neighborhood. Our houses here are selling like on the first day. We'll be fine. What I did not take into account was the amount of repairs and fixing up that we had to do for our house. So it was literally like 10, 11 days in a row of staying up late and waking up early to declutter the house and pack up things and sort through what we wanted to keep, what we wanted to sell, what we wanted to donate. I got the whole inside of packing and decluttering, and my husband got all of the repairs because I don't know if you know this, but my dog likes to eat doors and carpet and drywall and a lot of things. So those all had to get replaced and fixed and repaired and painted and drywalled and sanded and smoothed over. And we even got all brand new carpets because they were such a hot mess. Okay, in our defense, our carpets were nasty when we moved into this house, and our plan was to replace them right away. But then other costly, more important things came up, like we needed a new roof. We had a nasty windstorm that came through and ripped off a lot of our siding, so we had to get new siding. All those were expensive, so the carpet kept waiting. And now that we're leaving, we made our house look the best it has ever been. So isn't that ironic? But like I said, it's been crazy, and we are exhausted and excited. At the same time, we're now through most of the hurricane of chaos that came through our lives. We're now at the point where we just have to finish packing up and move, which sounds simple, but it's also a lot of work, and we're dreading that too. It's no longer fun at this point. I anticipate continued chaos in our household over the next few weeks. I'll tell you what though, the timing couldn't have been more perfect for my interview with Anna DeSimone. We did this interview about 2 weeks before we found the house, so maybe about 4 weeks ago at this point, and her advice is very beneficial for everyone who either currently has a house, wants to buy a house, or wants to build a house. It's applicable to everybody who is either a homeowner or looking to be a homeowner in some way, shape, or form. So please listen in and take some notes. And here is my interview with Anna DeSimone. Anna DeSimone is a nationally recognized expert on fair housing and is an author of more than 40 industry handbooks addressing safe and sound mortgages, predatory lending, and racial discrimination. In addition, she wrote books for the public, Housing Finance 2020, Welcome to the Agrihood, and today we will be discussing her newest book called Live in a Home That Pays You Back. This book lights the way for enjoying a home that is healthier, more comfortable, saves money, and reduces your carbon footprint. Whether you are planning to build, buy, or retrofit a home, award-winning author Anna DeSimone is here today to talk about your home of the future. Hello, Anna, and welcome.
Hi, Kaylin, and thank you for inviting me.
I'm glad that you're able to join us tonight.
The first thing I noticed about your site is it's starting sustainability.
Yes.
And it's great because sustainability is such a broad area that you can start it over and over again in so many different aspects of your life, you know, from transportation, food, and, you know, in so many of your lifestyle activities. Home is a really important investment. And when you start thinking about energy efficient improvements, you have to think very, very carefully, the same way you would about putting in a designer kitchen or putting in an addition on your house or finishing your basement. You have to ask yourself, am I over improving the house? And is it going to be beneficial for my whole family while we're living in it? And so what is the payback? And that's why I decided to write the book.
Yeah, and I've read your book and I found it insanely interesting and fascinating. And I wish I would have had the knowledge before I bought my first house, but I have the knowledge now and I'm armed with it going forward. So I'll make really good decisions in the future. So I'm glad that you wrote the book. It's very, very beneficial.
Well, I want to keep it simple. And, you know, when you're talking about net zero and a lot of energy efficient and renewable energy, it can get very complicated. You know, people that want to put solar panels on their house could buy a book on solar energy, and it's extremely complex. But so I tried to cover everything and have it be relatable to, you know, the average homeowner.
So let's, if you're okay, we'll back it up, because before you wrote books, you were in the mortgage industry, correct?
Well, I was in the part of the industry that does corporate governance on mortgage lenders, you know, making sure that they're following the rules. So I didn't work for a lender. I owned a consulting company and we had a team of attorneys. And over the course of 30 years, we audited about 500,000 mortgage files. When you open up a file that has 200 pages of documents in it, you actually see how the consumer is treated by their mortgage lender. And so I developed a lot of software programs for assessing whether or not people of color and families with disabilities and non-traditional households, we were able to follow certain protocols to see if these people were being treated differently than the traditional household borrower. And that's called, you know, discrimination or predatory lending. And I, you know, we did a lot of court cases on predatory lending and scams. So after 40 years, I sold the company to a larger firm, and it's still in existence, but I had to work for 5 years. So after I fully retired, I stopped writing guidebooks, how to stop discriminating against people. And I started writing for the consumer so that they would have something to make informed decisions. and live in a home that pays you back was kind of created because homes just keep getting more and more expensive.
Yeah, you're telling me they're insane right now.
Yeah, I mean, the average home in America is about $360,000 right now. And the wages are not climbing at the same time. So affordability is more strapped. People need to get as much out of their house as they possibly can, not only financially, but for their lifestyle.
We were discussing earlier something to take in consideration. I know this is starting sustainability, and a lot of people think in order to be sustainable, you have to live off the grid. You have to live, you know, like with an outhouse in the back. Maybe you can get some running water, solar panels for electricity, and a dirt floor, like the tree hugging hippie lifestyle. And you really don't have to do that. You can still be very sustainable in a neighborhood close to schools, close to your job that you might have to drive to it. Maybe you can walk or bike there. My job is 30 miles away. So I have to drive. There's no way I could walk there, but there are still different ways to be sustainable. So I'm glad that your book kind of helps cover sustainability in homes for all scenarios, not just the extreme off-grid, deep in the woods living.
Actually, off-grid living in remote areas works out well for people who are still working in the city or have kids in school in the city, and it's more affordable for them to rent. It makes more sense for them to rent for a while. But they could buy for $20,000 or $30,000, they could buy a zero carbon chalet or a kit, a prefab kit, and they could build something, because I think building and owning a home is part of the bucket list that people have for things that they really want to do. And it's a real estate investment. So you could buy a kit for, say, $30,000, roll up your sleeves, do a lot of the finishing work yourself, and then in 10 years, that property could be worth $100,000, could triple in value.
See, that's something that I wanted to pick your brain about, because there were some things in your book that you had mentioned that I hadn't heard about. So there's manufactured homes, prefabricated homes, modular homes. What is the difference between all of those, and do all of those hold their retail value? Because like some tiny homes, they're saying that they might be losing value. It's really hard to resell them because there's not a huge market for them. So I just want to, like, where's a good place to get started if I want to buy my home? Like, can you separate all the differences and kind of clear it up?
The thing about what the term prefabricated is an umbrella term. And what it really means is that all a part of the manufacturing process was completed at a facility. A custom-built home is referred to as a stick-built home. That's where you have a piece of land, then you pour a foundation, put in the foundation, and then the home is built. It's referred to as a stick-built home. But modular homes, manufactured homes, and prefabricated homes are all under this umbrella of homes that are built in a climate-controlled manufacturing facility. There's a couple of very important things about prefabricated homes. One of them is you have a lower cradle-to-grave carbon footprint. And I will go back to the stick-built house. When you have a stick-built house, you're having lumber being transported, let's just say, from Northwest Canada all the way to Florida or Indiana or Massachusetts. Well, the transportation of all of that lumber has a certain carbon footprint, because what is contributing to the greenhouse gas emissions is transportation. So now, when you have a manufactured home or a modular home, a lot of the manufacturing facilities are dotted across the United States. So as of 6 months ago, the United States had 129 manufacturing home plants. So if you were buying a house that was classified as a manufactured home, the transportation from the plant to your site would be shorter, which means it has a lower cradle to grave carbon footprint. The other thing about prefabricated homes is that whether they're modular or manufactured, they're made from sustainable, non-toxic, and long-lasting materials, which means they're durable. So what you have is fewer operational costs from taking care of the house. For instance, you might have a roof that's part asphalt shingle or part clay if you're in the southern states, or it could be part metal because metal roofs are more sustainable. And so the materials that are being used in these manufactured or modular homes are called structured insulated panels. They're just materials that are much more eco-friendly and much more durable. But importantly, for families of all sizes, the materials are non-toxic. Homes that were built 50, 60, 70 years ago were built with a lot of toxic materials. And I'll give you an example. Kitchen cabinets were made with laminated wood, but the glue that laminated the pieces of wood together would give off toxic fumes, not strong, but over a period of time. And so over the past 20 years, the builders associations have refined and reformulated building raw materials so that they're much healthier for us. So that's why people are not getting sick. There's better indoor air quality. To recap that, prefab is anything that is partially or fully built in its own site, manufacturing site, it's finished on the lot. Now, the difference between a manufacturing home and a modular home is kind of technical, because the Manufactured Housing Institute, the Manufactured Home Rules, were begun by HUD, which is the Department of Housing and Urban Development, about 60 years ago. So manufactured homes have to adhere to national building codes, whereas modular homes have to adhere to state and local building codes. It's very much like a custom-built house. The other difference is traditionally manufactured homes were mostly seen in communities called manufactured home communities, where the builder would buy 100 acres of land and then he would put up 200 homes and they would be like four or five models to choose from. And people would drive up, go to the open house, choose their model. And every fourth neighbor would have a house that looked just like theirs. But that was 20 or 30 years ago. That isn't how it is now. You can buy a manufactured home and have it delivered to your own private lot out in the woods. The manufactured home sales now are not going to big communities. They are rapidly going to individual homeowners. And they look very different. The traditional American farmhouse, mid-century modern, and even you'll see net zero and energy efficient manufactured homes. You'll see Energy Star manufactured homes. And the price is approximately half a stick-built home.
Quick question for you. When we're saying manufactured home, that would be the same thing as like a mobile trailer, like when we see trailer parks. Is what is that category of a house?
That's a whole different category.
Okay. Because like, that's what I keep thinking. I don't know why, but I keep thinking like a trailer and trailer park. And I'm like, but why would I want to buy those? Those depreciate over time. You're losing money.
They do. You're right. Okay. Well, I think that manufactured homes, I think that there was a stigma, you know, mobile homes, you can buy a mobile home and you can go across country, drive Route 66 all over the place. That's a mobile home. But trailer parks or mobile home parks, there's two types. There are mobile homes on permanent foundations and mobile homes that are on non-permanent foundations. So Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, and rural housing will give consumers loans on mobile homes if they're on a permanent foundation. If you have a home that's on a steel chassis, and some of these new, brand new, energy efficient, eco-friendly prefab kits are also, like tiny homes, are also on movable chassis. So if a home is on something that's movable, whether it's a traditional mobile home or a brand new eco-friendly kit, you can get a mortgage. It's called a chattel. It's a little bit like getting a car finance. It's going to be a shorter term loan. You'll need a larger down payment, and the interest rate might be a little bit higher. But FHA does have a program for those types of homes. But I wanted to go back to the clarifications of a modular home, because you can drive through any million-dollar neighborhood anywhere in the United States, and when you see the beautiful McMansions, among them will be modular homes that you don't even realize it, because the architectural styles are so unique and so beautiful. One of the most common differences in distinguishing modular from manufactured is a manufactured home is delivered to the site usually in two or three sections, whereas a modular home is usually designed in about five sections. So it's a little bit more complicated. And the reason why it's delivered in five sections is because the garage is going to have a different pitch roof. There might be a rocking chair porch that goes in front of the American farmhouse style house. There may be a master bedroom suite or a guest suite, because some modular homes are 4,000 or 5,000 square feet. These are not small homes. But the process itself, the technical process for the consumer between modular and manufactured are very similar. You need to have a piece of land. There needs to be a foundation put on the land. And then you discuss with the builder, well, the manufacturing company, at what point do you want to hire local contractors, or do you want to have their representatives actually complete the entire construction process? There's a lot of options for people in prefabricated homes.
There sure are. And when I was reading through your book, learning about the different style of homes, I went on, I can't remember the website now. There was a website that you recommended to go check out some modular homes. And I looked at it and I was like, maybe I entered it in wrong. I looked on Google and I typed in like modular homes, affordable modular homes. And the site that I landed on was like, have this beautiful home. It's like $1.5 million. And I was like, what is your definition of affordable? Because that is not anywhere close to my definition. And they're so stunningly beautiful. And I was like, I really want these, but I do not have millions of dollars to put on a house right now.
I think, well, the websites that I included in the book, if they were prefab zero carbon homes, or Energy Star, Net Zero Homes, it could have been EcoHome.
Yes, that sounds correct.
There's a 1,600 square foot model, and that was about $30,000, which is a fantastic price because it's an energy efficient house. More beautiful, gorgeous one that is pictured in front of a lake is a 2,300 square foot. And I believe that kit was closer to $70,000 or $80,000.
Hey, all those sound way more affordable than the millions. And the average price of a house right now was like $360,000 or $370,000. That was the average price for a house in America right now, which is so expensive. So these are much more affordable options. Thank you.
Well, the funny thing about kits and building homes is the cost of land is enormous. That's a big part of the investment. So if you're in a hot housing market, that means that your land value is higher. In my hometown in Boston, a land value could be 40% of the total value of your house. Other parts of the East Coast, the land value could be 20 to 30%. So you have a home that costs $300,000. But when you look at the real estate appraisal, the appraiser is going to indicate what the land value of that is, which could be $100,000. And so if we're talking about a beautiful 2,300 zero carbon kit that can be delivered, oh, by the way, LEED Platinum certified kit, quality home, you've still got to have the $50,000, $30,000, $50,000, or $80,000 to buy the land. And then you have to have the $20,000 approximate to put up the foundation. And then you need to put in all of the appliances.
That was my next question. I was like, does that kit come with counters and toilets and flooring, or I got to go get all that?
Typically, the kit is representing 40% of what would be your total cost, The other 60% is what you're pretty much going to have to spend to live in the house. But I do know one thing. If you take another look at that 2,300 square foot house, I mean, that's a home that you could easily see a price tag of $600,000 or $700,000 on in many U.S. states, many locations, just because of the cost of lumber, the cost of materials, not just the land.
So this has been a great discussion on building a house and building it appropriately. Something that I didn't even realize was an option until I read your book is that if you're having your house built, whichever way or form, that you could actually ask the builders to go above code. I didn't even realize that you could do that. I thought codes were like, this is the best there is. It's up to code. And you're like, no, codes are like middle level. You can actually ask them to go above code and make it even more efficient. And I was like, why aren't we doing that to begin with? Like, why do we settle for this middle score? That's just like, that's the common practice. And I didn't know that there was another option. Like, how did you learn about that?
Like I said, my company audited files, and a lot of them were construction loans. So we're reading and reading. And so I kind of taught myself from reading a lot of builders, the certifications. And so what you really start with in a construction loan is, let's just call it a health and safety code. You know, there are national standards that were developed by the National Home Builders Association. Building codes were made to hold weight, to get the elements out, like a code to have a roof, so that it could withstand, you know, rain and snow. And then, of course, there are state and local codes change a building code because it has to adapt to the weather. So above code is going above and beyond for energy efficient reasons. And so if we think of a code-built home, it's not only for conserving energy, it's for health and safety and just quality of craftsmanship and working. And so the best example for me to give you on this podcast above code is the Energy Star. And Energy Star has certified millions of homes over the past three decades in the United States. And Energy Star is also active in Canada. And so when you have an Energy Star home, your home is going to be 15 to 20% more energy efficient than a home that is built to code. And both the United States and Canada have a lot of designations like the LEED Platinum. And what these are above code. A code had to be established not only for health and safety reasons, but for affordability too. If you're going to have an energy efficient house, you would want an insulation R value of 40, but the code might be for an attic, the code might be R20. Now, I'm just giving you these numbers off the top of my head. So
that's okay. I have no idea about insulation. So I'm just going to go with whatever you say.
Well, anybody who knows I'm wrong is probably saying, she's crazy. That doesn't make sense at all. I'm just telling you as an example for simplicity.
I think I've got it. It's going to be better building materials that are more effective towards sustainability. It's better insulation, so you have a better control of your heat and cooling. And it's probably higher quality flooring that's going to last longer. Better windows versus the standard contractor windows. You'd have a higher quality windows that are more efficient. All of that's tied into it.
Well, I think that a builder would say it's not about quality, but performance and durability. And the world of code versus above code, it's really extras that would be optional. For instance, extra insulation, double glazed window. A code-built home would have a standard double-hung window. It might be a thermopane window, but it's one piece of glass. Above code might be double glazed, which is two pieces of glass. So it's not that the windows are better quality, they are just performing better. They're keeping the warm air in the house in the wintertime, and in the summertime, they're keeping the hot air outside and the cool air in the house. That's what high performance windows and doors do. But the heart of a house is the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, the HVAC. And so if you If you told me that you had $40,000 to spend on energy efficiencies, you might say, Anna, should I spend $40,000 on solar panels? Well, if you're living in Vermont or New Hampshire or upstate New York, you might only have 5 hours of sunlight a day. But if you're living in California or Florida, you might have 8 to 10 hours of sunlight a day. So part of the payback is, well, if I spend $40,000 on solar panels, it's going to take me 40 years to pay it back because my energy bill is only going to draw, it's only saving me $100 a month. And so what you have to look at, you start at the heart of the matter, and that is, how effective is my heating and air conditioning system? Because if you, I should say efficient, if you don't have an efficient HVAC system, it doesn't matter, well, if you have renewable energy such as wind power, hydroelectric, geothermal, or solar energy, it is not going to save you as much money, or it is not going to be as effective because you have a system that's either outdated, rusty, or not performing. So I like to call that the weakest link. You have to start with the HVAC. And so that $40,000 might be $10,000 for new ductwork, air sealing, a high-performance Energy Star rated furnace. That's a hot air system. If you have a hot water system, it would be a boiler. And so then the budget would be Energy Star appliances. And then you would have high-performance windows and doors. You would have extra insulation. And you might still have money left to purchase the solar panels, but you can also lease them under what's called a power purchase agreement. I like to recommend to all homeowners or people that are looking to buy a home and they want it to be energy efficiency is stretch your budget out so that you're covering all of the different parts of your house. In other words, don't spend all of your money just renovating one part of your house. It's like buying a house for $300,000 and then spending $50,000 on a swimming pool. And then you have to sell your house for some reason, job transfer or whatever. And the appraiser tells you, well, the house is worth $20,000 more because of the pool. And you say, wait a minute, I spent $50,000 on that pool. And what the real estate brokers of the world and the appraisers are trying to say is your house can only go up in value as it relates to the rest of the house. It's like it's an over-improvement. So you have to spread your money out. And so an energy-efficient home, it's best to start with the most important part, which is the heating and cooling system. Because the more efficient that is, the better it would be. I just want to hear what you have to ask about that.
Well, I was going to ask, we were talking about building houses, and I was going to ask, so if you've already got a house, where do you recommend we start? But you pretty much nailed it already. Start with the heating and AC. If you've already owned a house, that's where we got to start. And then kind of like work our way outwards from there, addressing the appliances and other things.
The thing about the furnace and hot water heaters is you're either cooling your home or heating your house almost 24/7 every day. A high performance furnace going to be save you money and operate the house smoothly. It is quieter. It provides more comfortable living. It's going to have more a greater temperature control so that, you know, you're not hot one part of the day and then freezing in another part or different rooms. And, you know, a high performance furniture is a much more comfortable lifestyle for people. And then it will also save a tremendous amount of money. The most popular type of furnace that's being built in America right now in new homes is the ground source heat pump.
Is that the geothermal?
No, you'll see geothermal being built in a lot of the new housing developments, you know, like the high-end builders, because it's much more cost-effective for the builder to put in a mini geothermal plant. And then he gives all of the homeowners, he might build 30 or 40 homes in the community. And then he would give the homeowners the option, well, for $5,000 more, you can have geothermal. And I would say, grab it. But geothermal is not available in all parts of the United States. So you could go on the Department of Energy maps and get an update. But where geothermal is available, there are private homeowners who are having an individual geothermal system installed, but it's very expensive.
I would like to rewind just a little bit and explain, because the first time I heard of the term geothermal energy was in your book when I started reading it. And I was like, what is this? So I learned about it. And then a couple of weeks ago, we had the Indianapolis home show and we went there and they had a vendor, a booth there who was doing geothermal. And I was like, oh, I know what this is. And so I got all the literature. So I'm planning on doing an episode in the future, like going in full on detail about geothermal, but I'm going to take a guess that listeners of this podcast, some of them may know what it is, but I'm going to guess that majority probably don't know what geothermal is. So we can do just like a real short, brief description of what geothermal heating and cooling is. So that way they're kind of caught up.
Yeah. Well, geothermal is available 365, 24/7, and it's free. So if you dig under if you go below Earth's core, like 80 feet below ground that we walk on, there are hot and cold properties. And there are also hot and cold properties that are taken from water. But most homes with geothermal are being utilized from what we call these long pipes are drilled into the ground as much as 200 feet deep. Now, those are the expensive. But if you saw a vendor at the home show, it could have been Dandelion Energy, which is a wonderful new vendor. And some of them are tapping geothermal on more shallow. The piping is spread out and like long rectangles, like 12 to 20 feet under the house. So it doesn't cost so much to drill. So there's two types of geothermal. There's the really deep wells, and then there's the more shallow ones, but they both give the same effect. And so you can heat or cool your home, because what happens is when the hot or cold properties are collected from the Earth's core, it goes through a heat pump system, and then it feeds into the hot water heater or your furnace on your air conditioning system. And according to the Department of Energy, it can save up to 2/3 of energy costs.
Good, because I think most people recognize solar panels as an energy source. And I mean, solar panels would do all electricity, including running your HVAC system, but geothermal would kind of take a lot of the pressure off of the solar panels. You wouldn't need as much energy because the geothermal would take a chunk of that. And then you wouldn't need nearly as many solar panels or as much sunlight. So if you're in an area that only has 5 hours, then solar panels would be a viable option because you wouldn't need as much energy from it.
The great thing about solar panels is, well, first of all, it's easy to understand how they work. And, you know, you have to remember, like, you have two small children. Sustainability is about the now and our future. I mean, we want to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. We want to lower our carbon footprint. And what a wonderful thing for you to do for your children, but to go in your backyard and put up a solar bird bath and say, this square thing is absorbing rays from the sun, and it's causing the wheel of the fountain to go around, and that's creating this energy. And so when you put a solar panel on your house, you are really teaching something really, really special to your children. I like solar energy because it's clean. Of course, we're not using fossil fuels. It's clean. There's a lot of ready backup and assistance. Now, I mentioned that you can lease solar panels. The thing I like about leasing solar panels is all of the installation and the repair and the problems are going to be handled by the leasing company. But if you buy your solar panels, you're also going to have, it's going to be serviced just like your car dealer services your car. Now, you have to upgrade the electricity in your house. But there's a lot of really cool things you can do with solar energy. And one of them is that you don't have to put the panels on your roof. You can put them on the side of your house, and they're called ground-mounted solar panels, or you can put them on the top of your garage. You can put them on the top of a carriage house or another building. And one of the hot things in America now is called a solar carport, where you have like a quasi-garage. You put the panels on, and then you charge your Tesla or your Nissan Leaf for your electric car underneath your solar-powered carport. I like the solar carport idea for lawn tools and other equipment. Now, here's the best part about all these extra solar panels. You sell your excess energy for money. There are people making thousands of dollars a year selling their energy. And I think that's very cool, especially if you have kids that are in high school. They're talking to you about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. And you say to your high schooler, hey, I got a challenge for you. Figure out how we can make money selling solar energy. Google it. Look it up. Well, it's called a renewable energy certificate or a solar renewable energy certificate. But it needs to be permissible under your state law. And your utility company needs to allow you to sell the RECs under the specific agreement you have with them. So let's just say the state of Indiana says, yeah, you can sell renewable energy certificates. And the utility companies say, yeah, we have agreements that allow you to sell the certificates. But if you happen to choose a program that gives you a cheaper cost for electricity, you might not have the option to sell the certificate. But just so you know, a renewable energy certificate is 1,000 kilowatts, and they're usually worth, they go up and down like the stock market. They're sold as a commodity, but typically they're selling for like $500. And in California, people are selling them every couple of months, depending on how many panels they have. We're making $5,000 a year.
I think that's awesome. I read about that in your book on how to do that. And of course, I immediately shared it with my husband. We don't have solar panels right now. It's something that we would like to do, but we look into it and we're like, wow, it's going to be about $20,000 to $30,000, which is a lot. And so that gave me a little bit more oomph for my side of the argument was, but then we can sell these certificates and then use that money to get ahead on solar panel payments. So it would help pay off your solar panels a little bit faster.
Most states have 0% solar energy loans. The United States has 2,000 incentive programs for renewable energy and energy efficiency. I mean, so many people don't realize that all of the deals that are really good for you are not advertised on the internet because they come from public authorities. It's like the city of Indianapolis or the city of Franklin or state of Indiana or your county. They all have municipal offices, and the municipal offices have bonds and they have programs. And so one of the reasons why I was motivated to write this book is because when I was writing my housing finance books, and I included a compendium of state housing finance programs, I saw that every single state housing finance organization, every one of them had low interest energy efficient renovation loans. I thought nobody knows about this because public housing financing is not advertised. You're not going to see them on LendingTree. If you're looking to buy a house, Google the town that you're looking to live in or all of the towns that you're considering. You keep Googling until you find the housing department, and then you find the grant department, and then you look at the energy incentives. And it's like coupon clipping for your $300,000 house. And sometimes you have, you know, an income limitation. But sometimes there isn't. There are programs for veterans. There are programs for families where that one of the members is a handicapped person. You can get a 0% loan to put in handicap access in your house. People don't know about this. So the United States, there are 2,000 that I counted programs, and I counted these manually. And they're always growing all of the time, which is why I listed it in the directory. That's just going to be the tip of the iceberg in 5 years. The renewable energy that you choose starts with two things. Where can you get a free grant or an incentive? And what are the laws? So about two-thirds of the states in the United States now have laws that if you live in a condominium development, the developers cannot stop you from putting solar panels. However, they can tell you where they can be placed on the roof. Like, they can't be in the front, they can only be in the back. And if you want to put a windmill in your house, there's going to be rules on the setback and the height of the windmill. And of course, hydroelectric, you need to have running water. But whenever we're talking about renewable energy and moving away from fossil fuels, there are lots of rules and stipulations from your state and local government that you need to check out.
Like you said earlier, I want to reiterate, that at the back of your book is an index that has state by state, all the different programs and policies. It's all there. You laid it all out for us. So you can just find yours. And there's stuff for every single state and Canada. So if we have any Canadian listeners, this book is also a dual book for both Canada and US. I found that was really helpful because a lot of, at least in my neck of the woods in the Midwest, we realize that there's a lot of incentives for the coast, the West Coast and the East Coast. And in Middle America, it's harder to find those, but you found them and you laid them right out for us, which is phenomenal. So thank you so much for doing all that work.
Well, I decided to include Canada because the Paris Agreement, almost every country in the world was in favor of the Paris Agreement for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And then last November, Canada came out with their, you know, net zero greenhouse gas emissions policy. When we talk about solar energy, geothermal, home construction codes and above codes in the net zero home program, I noticed that the Energy Star and the major manufacturing institutes of housing were making the rules, we're now calling them rules for North America. In other words, Canada is honoring some of the mortgage documentation we have in the United States. The Appraisal Institute is also working in Canada. The LEED program, which is the most famous, you know, the LEED Platinum Certificate in Energy Efficiency, you know, they're all over Canada. And I thought, you know, for a little bit extra work in my book, and I really like the Canadian Home Builders Association. They were absolutely wonderful to work with, and they were just great. And I found that, you know, especially for all of the states, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Washington, state of Washington, and Wyoming, there are people who are living in the U.S. that are looking maybe to build a home in Canada. So I decided to include it. And of course, my grandchildren are both living there, so they really got a kick out of it. I sent them both copies of the book. So, and of course, they're millennials, so they're very energy conscious.
That's great. That's great. You sent them copies of your book. And where can listeners get a copy of your book? Where should they go?
If you go on my website, annadesimone.net, you can, of course, Amazon is free shipping. However, the ebook is always a lot cheaper. And the nice thing about the ebook is you can click into all of the links of those 2000 incentives that I've been mentioning. But the book is on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Target, but they're all listed on my website. And of course, you can contact me with a question.
That was my next question. If listeners have questions that maybe I didn't ask, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Go on, look at my bio on my website, and you'll see my personal email address, annabankers@gmail.com, B-A-N-K-E-R-S, Anna Bankers.
Is that because you worked in the banking industry, or was that a...
That was part of my company name, Bankers Advisory. And after I sold the company, I had to get my own email. You know, as I said to you earlier when we first started talking, you have to remember that your house is an investment, and if you are buying a house for $300,000, based on average appreciation rates in America, that house could double in value in 10 years. And so that's $30,000 a year, approximately $20,000 to $30,000 a year. And so taking care of a home is so important. And that's why, you know, think carefully about all of the different things that you want to do for energy efficiency, but make sure that you're improving your house to enjoy it. It's got to be good for your family and your whole household.
You want to literally live in a house that pays you back. It's not going to be writing you a check each month, which is what I was really hoping when I first got your book, but it is paying you back in many other ways.
Well, the most important is the health, the indoor air quality. Energy efficient homes are much healthier to live in, and they're also more comfortable. But the payback is the financial rewards is it's going up in value and you're saving money on utilities. And net zero, you have like practically zero utility costs. But the most important thing in that financial nest egg keeps growing because energy efficient homes are selling faster on multiple listing, according to the Realtors Association, and they're selling for higher prices.
Which is good, because if I put all this energy into my house to make it more energy efficient, then when I go to sell it, I want to make it more attractive and get as much money as I can.
Yeah, it's spread around. You start with the furnace and then work your way through different parts of the house. Doors and windows, roof, furnace, insulation, air sealing, all. But we have to close with something really important. The best first step, if you already own a home, is to get an energy audit.
Oh, okay.
You know, they can be very fancy and the guy comes with this infrared $1 million piece of equipment. And if your grandfather came to your house and went up to your attic and he saw a ray of light, he'd say, "You got a leak in your attic, son." That you don't need it. You don't need to spend $1,000 for something very common sense. Look in your basement, look for the air leaks yourself. But utility companies are offering free energy audits, and they will, if they do charge $300 or $400, they will refund that back to you if you upgrade some of your equipment. But start with the basics. I mean, the energy audits can be very, very complicated, and you really want to know, just tell me the most important things that are wrong with the house. Because $1,500 for an energy audit, I mean, that could be the price of a new hot water heater. So go for the free stuff first.
Yeah, I know around here, our utility companies do that. We have our electric company. Once a year, they'll send us a little postcard. It's time for your free energy audit. We're happy to come out. We'll do an assessment for free. And then they give you like a little kit. Like you get some light bulbs, you get the little faucet aerators. They give you a little insulation, weather stripping for around your door. That just like comes in your kit and it's free, which is awesome. And then our HVAC company that we use, they did the same thing. Like we'll come out, we'll double check your HVAC system. It's an HVAC and plumbing. So they also double checked all of our plumbing and all of it was free. So that was great for us. So you're right. They're available. They're out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've heard about the HERS score. And, you know, people get very hung up on, you know, their energy score, like they get hung up on their FICO score when they're getting a mortgage. I mean, it's like not everybody gets an A on their school report card. You don't try too hard to have a perfect energy score. Don't try too hard to have the perfect credit score. Don't make yourself crazy. Enjoy the house.
For listeners of Starting Sustainability, Anna has a wonderful discount for her book. If you're interested, you can go to her website, which is annadesimone.net, and you can get the book for 30% off, which would make it about $16, and she'll cover the shipping costs for you. They go to your website. Where do they go to request the book?
Go to my website, annadesimone.net, and they can just go to the contact. It's easier for them, or email me at annabankers@gmail.com.
Okay. And then just say that you heard about the book from Starting Sustainability Podcasts. Well, thank you so much for that. That's really wonderful. That's very nice of you to share your book. I'm glad that speaks true to your heart, that you're really doing this not for the money, but you're doing this to spread the information and to promote sustainability, which is marvelous. Well, before you go, I would like to know if you would be interested in playing a game.
Sure.
Just going off of Banker's Advisory and knowing that you're in helping with mortgages and or not helping with mortgages, but like auditing mortgages and lending and making sure that is done thoroughly. So I created this game and it's called Bank Heist.
Ooh.
I do have to give credit of this game to a radio show that I listen to. It's called Kid Craddock in the Morning. And so they kind of play this on the air. The difference between the nationally syndicated radio is that when you play on them, you actually win real money. And here you're going to win Monopoly money because I don't get paid for this. And I don't have a bunch of advertisers giving me money to hand out. So, but you do get bragging rights.
Okay.
All right. So the way this game works is that as of this moment in time, you are the bank robber and you've actually made your way through the bank and you're in the vault. And there are 10 bags in the vault, bags numbers 1 through 10. And they have different amounts of money in them. And one of them has a dye pack. Now you're in a hurry and you only have 2 hands. So you can grab about 3 bags, but that's all that you can carry. So which 3 bags do you grab real quick? So give me 3 bags, numbers 1 through 10. Pick your 3 bags and we'll see how much money you get or if you get the dye pack. If you get the dye pack, you lose.
I would take bags 1, 2, and 10.
1, 2, and 10. I have little cards here that these represent my bags. Okay. So which one do you want to open up first?
10.
10. You got $550. Which is the next bag that you would like to open?
One.
$275. All right. Last bag, number two. How are you feeling? Do you think it's the die pack?
No, I don't.
You have good gut intuition. You grabbed the only bag that was $1,000. So all in all, hold on, I got to do math real quick. You've got 15, 16, 17, 1825. So you have $1,825. Woo! That was a very successful bank heist.
Well, good. See, I think that the die bag is always in the middle.
Yep.
Say 4 or 5.
Yep. You know what? It was number 4 for this game. There it is, die pack. Number 4.
I spent a lot of time in banks only because they were my clients. Those were the days. But I'm enjoying writing now.
Well, good. I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast and sharing your story and sharing all the knowledge that you have. So glad that you're able to have a promotion and discount for the listeners of Starting Sustainability. That's very generous of you. We all thank you very much for all the hard work that you're doing. It was wonderful getting to know you. Thank you again. It's been fantastic.
It's been wonderful knowing you and talking with you, Kay. And I actually stayed up a lot later than I thought I would. All right. So till next time.
Thank you again, Anna. What a fantastic interview. Very knowledgeable. We didn't even touch on probably half of what she has to say. There's so much more. She's a very, very intelligent lady. She's been in this field a long time, and she can really help you out. And like I said, she's got 2 other books. You can go to her website and get a ton of information. Don't forget, you can email her and let her know that, hey, I heard you on the Starting Sustainability podcast, and she'll give you 30% off of a book, which is a really nice deal. She's really doing this out of the goodness of her heart, and she really just wants everybody to have the knowledge on all of the different programs available and the different ways that you can literally make money back off of your house. And now it is time for our weekly challenge. Let me open up my little tin here, draw a card, and it says, if you have periods, try switching to a reusable menstrual cup. Sorry guys, I don't know if you can really participate in that one, but ladies, go at it. I talked about this, I think this is like episode 6, maybe 5. It was definitely within the first 10 episodes where I talked about all things feminine and definitely got into a lot of detail about the menstrual cup and what to expect. So if you have not made that switch and you are interested in learning about it, check out one of my earlier episodes. Here, let me look it up for you so I can give you the accurate information. Okay, I just looked it up. It is for sure episode 5. So you have to scroll back all the way to the beginning. And that was definitely before I really knew what I was doing in the world of podcasting. So bear with me in that episode. I have definitely improved since then, but the information is still very helpful, very good, very knowledgeable. Be sure to tune in on April 4th. That will be the next episode. April 4th. That's easy. 4-4. That's easy to remember. Be sure to tune in April 4th, where I'm going to talk about 2 very different but very important topics. The first one is ways that you can have a sustainable Easter and all the fun things that you can do to celebrate the holiday, but also be very earth conscious. And the other topic, which is literally on the other end of the spectrum on this, is to address the increasing gas prices and what you should or should not do to help your pocketbook and sustainability efforts. It'll be a very intriguing episode. Until then, continue to save the world, Sustainer Nation, and send a few little prayers towards my family as we continue to go through this move. Hopefully it is a smooth transition with a little bit of stress, but we'll be just fine. We'll power through. I love you all. I appreciate everything that you do every day to keep this world as sustainable as possible. And if you haven't started working on your gardens yet, do it for me since I can't. All right, Sustainer Nation, take care, and I will talk to you all again next time, April 4th. Bye.